You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you. Burgers are best fresh from the grill. Well, more specifically, burgers with Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. It's so rich and creamy that it instantly makes any burger irresistible. And what backyard barbecue is complete without some potato salad? Not just any potato salad, of course. Potato salad highlights the rich, creamy goodness of Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. So if you want to take your barbecue season to the next level, stock up on Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. For great recipe ideas, visit hellmanns.com.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Around the NFL podcast is ready for a lovely staycation.
Hello and welcome to Around the NFL. My name is Dan Hansis. I got heroes from across Los Angeles. Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler. There it is, Greggy. I mean, I love your new remote backdrop in your new home here in Los Angeles, the Namath book with the greatest ever title. What is it? Life keeps getting better because I get better looking every day. Something like that.
That sounds better than what it really is.
And then over the left shoulder and well-deserved, the Lox trophy sitting on top of a bunch of books.
I do plan to work on this at some point, this garage, but we've had other issues in the house to settle first. We got the parents
visiting. You know?
Oh, yeah. I just mean the rest of this garage, everything is still a mess, but I'm happy to be here and happy to just brag on that Lock trophy for the next 12 months.
I mean, Greg, you used to very prominently above your left shoulder have beautiful images of your children. You've replaced it with a betting with a betting trophy that you won.
Yeah, that's my priorities.
I was gonna say it's a bit of a natural progression.
Yeah,
the kids aren't so young anymore.
Yeah, it's like middle school.
I was gonna say our kids have aged out of like adorable little baby darlings stage. So you know the trophy at a certain point has to take center stage. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing great. You know, we're taping a little bit early today, and then it triggers what is essentially like sort of a 3.5-day weekend for us, barring any sort of news that should tumble down and cause massive disruption to my plans.
Yes, and I don't think the NFL would ever do that to us, even though there is a ongoing record of that happening. Something happening immediately after we finish taping that dates our podcast ever so slightly for the past 703 weeks.
Including Wednesday with your boy Elijah Moore.
Yes, and I just want to say we're about to hit the news. This is a trigger warning to some listeners that we're going to start the news by talking about an NFL topic that involves the Jets. And if this bothers you at all, I suggest one of two things. Touch grass or kiss my ass.
Ooh.
Let's hit the news.
Jets at their own 38. Crowder in motion to stack behind Moore left. Back to throw is Flacco. Throws one up the seam. It's caught. Elijah Moore in the open. Left sideline to the 40, to the 30, to the 20. 10, 5, pylon. Touchdown. Elijah Moore streaks down the left side of the field. Joe Flacco found him in stride. And the Jets are a point after away from a tie.
Yes, Elijah Moore. And it was just yesterday when we were talking about the power rankings, and I was saying, I hope Elijah Moore gets another chance with the Jets playing with a real quarterback because I think there is obviously something there. He flashed on a very high level over, you know, about a, it was only about a 5 or 6 week stretch, but his draft stock combined with that stretch before he got hurt as a rookie, it was like, okay, this guy could be a star. Things went sideways this past season for Moore, who was benched. He had an outburst with then offensive coordinator Mike LaFleur, the Jets, and made a trade request that I think really did ruffle feathers at Florham Park. So what happens? The Jets, right after we learn that Mecole Hardman is heading to New York on a free agent deal, they send Elijah Moore, their former second overall pick, and a third round pick in 2023 to the Cleveland Browns in exchange for a 2023 second round pick. Mark, I'll start with you on this one. For the Jets, it adds another draft pick as they're trying to get this Aaron Rodgers deal done. I wonder, not to jinx us as we're taping early, if this is the first, you know, step towards maybe a resolution there, but, you know, who knows? But the Browns get a player with a lot of upside that definitely disappointed in 2 years with the Jets, but maybe not all of his fault, probably not all of his fault.
Yeah, I think it's hard to evaluate Jets receivers and tight ends in general with the chaos that they've faced at quarterback. I mean, from a Browns angle, the one thing I think about Andrew Berry, I think he doesn't want to ever be outdone in a bid for a wide receiver. You look at what they gave away for Amari Cooper, which was, I think, a fifth rounder. And in this, you're flipping a second for a third. It was good value on a player that doesn't cost much money over the next couple of seasons. And they can try to find out what they have with Deshaun Watson at the helm versus Zach Wilson or Joe Flacco. I like it for Cleveland because wide receiver was an absolute need. And I think where they are in the draft, like, you know, you don't know what's going to come your way. And so you pair him with Amari Cooper, with Donovan Peoples-Jones. They liked David Bell a year ago, but he didn't really emerge as a rookie due to some injuries early and just sort of not getting his spot. So it helps a position of need for Cleveland. And I'm with you, Dan, because, you know, we text a little bit about it after that. I just have to think that it's a wide receiver heavy room in New York right now. You added Mecole. There's interest in Odell Beckham. And that second round pick, I think, might have been the final piece, potentially, that Green Bay was saying, we need that. If you can't get that, this thing's on hold. And so if this made all that happen, then there's a greater context and reason for it. And a Jets fan can't be too unhappy about what it might lead to.
I think Jets fans, including myself, are kind of unhappy about the deal where it stands right now.
Because yeah, but what if it leads to Rodgers? Yeah. What if it's the only way you get Rodgers?
Then well, the whole thing is like Jets fans and so many other people are like, we're already operating under the idea that we have Rodgers. Now it's a matter of Joe D, the GM, finding a way to get it done. And I think the disappointment here is more in the, hey, if he fell out of favor internally, and Greg, I'll tee you up on this, so be it. If you no longer thought maybe he was a good fit for the locker room, or you have a new play caller in there now and they wanted to bring in Mecole Hardman that brings something different to the room and you're going to add something else, that's cool. But what happens with Elijah Moore is it feels like, God, is he going to turn into Chris Carter going from the Eagles to the Vikings? Probably not. But can he become a Pro Bowl like player that's ripping the league up next year with Deshaun Watson? That is within the range of outcomes.
Wow. If that happens, it's a total disaster. I'm just thinking like, can he be a younger Cole Beasley or something? $3.3 million over the next 2 years. We look at all these deals in the context of their contracts and like, oh, you have to give a pick away if you have a bad contract. What an asset this contract is. 2 years, $3.3 million. And I love this deal for the Browns. And you're right. I think the Jets level of disappointment kind of depends on what happens with Moore and what happens with this Rodgers trade. But for the Browns, it's amazing. I mean, they gave up nothing to get Amari Cooper, who's a borderline 1-2, and they gave up basically nothing for Elijah Moore, who to me can be a great 3, maybe a 2. And Jets fans
will
say,
for
well,
it to be amazing though, Greg, for it to be amazing, not to interrupt, he does have to become like a more of a high level receiver, which I think he could be. If he's Cole Beasley, I mean, you did give up a second-round pick.
But you didn't. You gave up a pick swap. You right. got a very valuable pick back. All you did was trade down. And I think Andrew Berry's operating under the correct assumption that there's a very good chance, maybe that's the wrong way to say it, there's a much higher chance than people seem to like accept on the outside that the 74th player in the draft is better than the 42nd player in the draft. That 74th pick is very valuable. Like we saw the Cowboys wouldn't give up anything close to that for Brandon Cooks or Stephon Gilmore. If you go look at the last two drafts, like who's 72, who's 84, for instance. And like I went and looked last year and it was, I think it was Andrew Booth was for Minnesota and Desmond Ridder for the Falcons was 74. And then back in 2021, 42 is Liam Eichenberg and 74 is Benjamin St. Juste for Washington, who's been a much better player than Eichenberg. And it's just like these picks are kind of crapshoots, and you're still getting a pretty good one on day one. And more importantly, you're getting a guy who I think has a lot of upside. And that's why I got into such an argument on text with our friend Andrew Siciliano, one of the most prominent Brown fans in the building. And my thing is, I just really like Elijah Moore. I think he can be a really good receiver.
What was Andrew saying?
He was saying, look, that's a premium pick at 42. And like he's excited about that pick, and he wasn't even that excited about getting Elijah Moore, and thinking like, oh, this guy might not be that excited. And I would give up a third round pick straight up for Elijah Moore, much less just that pick swap.
Well, Dan, I'd ask you a question, like when you're the Jets and you ship out Elijah Moore to get the second, but then you offer the third, which to Greg's point, like who that. That's sort of, you know, we'll see how either one of those picks land up, but it's not that stark of a difference. Like, it just tells me the Jets had to obtain the second rounder for something, because I don't know why you do it. I don't know why you move him in this deal for what you got back. There is not, it doesn't scream value. And so it screams to me part A of a A-B step plan here.
Agree.
Yeah,
agree.
I'm my feeling is that we're going to need to see the dust clear on this one. I really do think people that don't follow the team as closely, there is context in terms of like where he started. When he came in, he seemed like a total steal. And last year was not great. I mean, he literally, I think he told LaFleur, he said, you know, go F yourself in the middle of practice, and then walked off. And then he demanded a trade when they were in the midst of that run where they're on a winning streak. And I really think it's one of those things where he probably soured inside that organization in terms of how they view him. I think it's a mistake. I think they should have held on to him. But sometimes like we don't know what's internally, what their conversations are about, what they think about the player beyond just his ability level. I think there's some of that. I think there's some Beckham in here, which I'm also lukewarm on at best. But also I'm like other Jets fans, it's Jesus take the wheel time right now. It's just like, let's see where everything lands. And maybe it ends in an exciting, fun place. But this is not. This is a white knuckle offseason for if you're a fan of that team. And you know, we should just quickly, like, you know, Deshaun Watson is. It's a huge story now as he enters his first full season after all the issues of his own creating, of course, his own creation. He does now. He has Cooper. He has Moore. He has Nick Chubb. He is going to have an opportunity here to move the ball and score points. So I think it's a good trade for the Browns, but there is still that huge mystery around Cleveland about what Deshaun Watson shows up in August. Who knows? Maybe Elijah Moore is complaining in October because Watson can't move the football because he didn't move the football at the end of last
year. He won't
be
the only one complaining if Watson's not delivering in October.
Right. Donovan Peoples-Jones is a nice little receiver for them too. He's into a rotation guy, and Njoku's a good tight end. They have a okay group around Watson now. And part of this is just, I could be wrong about Elijah Moore. He's a type of receiver I tend to like, guys who can get open, who can really run routes. And I don't know if the Jets and Browns consider this, but we have a subscription to PFF Ultimate. And I'm really basing most of my excitement on about 40 minutes, I would say, of homework. I really grinded the tape last offseason.
Good work.
Of watching Elijah Moore's routes for about 40 minutes. It was a lot. And I was so impressed by that 40 minutes. I'm convinced he's going to be a great receiver. So they should maybe check out PFF Ultimate.
That's a good plug. One slight pushback to that, with all of the quarterback dysfunction with the Jets, a guy like Garrett Wilson was still a monster. And Elijah Moore went 5 games where he had one catch and as a regular part of the offense. He really disappeared last year.
That's fair.
He really disappeared. But again, great trade for Cleveland. The Jets, let's see. It's a wait and see. In other news, sad news. Foster Moreau, the tight end, free agent tight end, formerly of the Raiders, and he had been taking visits and had visited with the Saints. And during a physical, he learned that he is has been diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. He will be stepping away from football to fight that battle. And obviously, anything connected to the world of cancer is very sad and scary, and our podcast knows that all too well. All we could say is he's going to get the best treatment available, and we hope for the best, and for a speedy recovery for Foster Moreau.
Yeah, the timing is brutal, but maybe it was good timing that he found out on this free agency tour. It's also something, though, as like a mid-round pick, like he was about to get that, you know, a chance maybe to start for the first time. Very well respected with the Raiders. But yeah, every it's going to happen, I guess, for the rest of our life. Every cancer news hits harder because of Wes. So hoping the best for him, and hope he can recover quick.
I mean, he visited a couple teams, and so it tells you that, you know, the tests they put you through medical-wise are going to be different. But it's almost like, yeah, he may not play for the Saints, but how fortunate that he had that visit, that it was found, hopefully early. He already put out a message saying, I'm going to kick this thing's ass and get back to doing what I love, which is, we know that's possible too. So I don't know. It changes everything you think about him. He was just sort of a reserve tight end in my mind before, and now it's completely different.
And, you know, just to tag this sad story with something optimistic and hopeful, you know, John Menchie, the third, a draft pick of the Texans last year, shortly after he was drafted, he was diagnosed with leukemia over the summer, missed all of his rookie campaign. And Nick Caserio, the Texans GM, said earlier this year that he's had an amazing recovery and they believe he could be back for the offseason program. So let's hope it's a similar path for Foster Moreau.
Might play with his old teammate, Bryce Young. If he ends up there second, they could reunite, John Metchie and Bryce Young.
There you go. Speaking of Bryce Young, we're having teams meeting with the top quarterbacks in the draft. The draft is coming up, boys. The draft is about 5 weeks away now. The Carolina Panthers met with both C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young, a huge contingent at his pro day, 12 Panthers officials, including the owner, front office, members of the staff. They also, as I said, met and spoke with Bryce Young, whose pro day, I believe, is today. The Raiders also met with Bryce Young. And yeah, that's interesting, Marky. Of course, we have the Raiders who just signed Jimmy Garoppolo, and we know where they are in the draft board relative to these QB-starved QBs teams. I wonder where the Raiders are going to come down draft day at that position.
Yeah, I mean, I've always viewed, I think we all did, Jimmy Garoppolo as a, you know, a stopgap, a bridge to something else. I think that if you're Josh McDaniels, you want to almost give yourself some runway to say, I've drafted this rookie quarterback and it's me. That's why you hired me, to groom him, to grow him. And it's not that Jimmy G's a finish line. I always look at that card where the Cardinals are sitting up there high in the draft. They've got Kyler Murray. They're a rebuilding team. That is a target for someone like the Raiders or someone else to say, we're going to hopscotch the rest of these guys, get up there and get someone we like very early on.
I am really buying the whole CJ Stroud to Carolina thing. And I know they're like meeting with the other quarterbacks too, but it was starting at his pro day, and it's starting with like the owner going there. And our old friend, Josh Norris from Underdog Fantasy, we've had on the show a few times, is part of it. To me, because he had Josh McCown working for Underdog during the season before he got this job, and he did a 40-minute segment on CJ Stroud where he just gushes. He compares him to Joe Burrow, thinks he's really similar to Joe Burrow. There's this clip going around of him at the pro day, which another old friend of ours, Andrew Hawkins, pointed out, and he's friends with Josh McCown, just like, Josh needs to work on his poker face, because in his like saying goodbye to CJ Stroud, he like hugs him and touches him about 14 different times. Just like, he loves this dude. He's talked about this dude. And weirdly, I don't know why Stroud's like upside's gotten maybe a little undersold compared to Bryce Young, but what I've watched, it's like, it's pretty exciting. And sure, a lot of people like Bryce Young better, but CJ Stroud profiles as a guy who would go in the top two or three in most every draft. And it just seems like they are in love with this dude. And at this point, I'd be surprised if he's not the guy.
And of course, we've been covering free agency and the fallout of that for the past week or so, but we will start pivoting back to digging in on the draft next week. In fact, we have Daniel Jeremiah. Jeremiah?
Jeremiah. Jeremiah.
A soft J. Jeremiah.
Yeah, looking forward to learning more about him next week. Who he is, what he does.
That's what's happening in the news. All right, let's take a break and then get Andrew Marchand of the New York Post on this their show.
It's backyard barbecue season, so light up the charcoal or fire up the propane and throw some burgers on the grill. Some people like cheeseburgers, others like hamburgers, and people will argue about pickles until the cows come home. But there's one thing that needs no debate. Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. It's so rich and creamy that it instantly makes any burger irresistible. You add Hellmann's and boom, next level burgers, it's that easy. And then there's the side that every backyard burger cries out for, potato salad. Do you want to know the best secret ingredient? You've probably already guessed it, Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. There are two kinds of potato salad, deliciously irresistible, rich and creamy potato salad, and potato salad made without Hellmann's. It's up to you what you want to serve. For great recipe ideas, visit Hellmann's.com.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Welcome back. Our next guest is a favorite. I mean, he's a dominant presence in sports media coverage right now. There's no way around it. He also is the co-host of the Marchand and O'Rand sports media podcast. It's Andrew Marchand.
Very nice introduction. I appreciate it.
Hey, I want to tell you something, Andrew. And I was listening to your show about a week or so ago. And it's a very good podcast, by the way. Everybody should check it out. And I think it's getting a little juice because your partner, John, says something like, oh, you made a comment like, you know, people are starting to give me some issues for things I say on this show. And, you know, I don't know if you're getting aggregated or it's just people in the media reaching out to you privately. And then John says, and this is a great spot for Marchand, by the way. John goes, yeah, people are coming up to me and being like, why do you let him say that? And then John's like, I can't control him. Which is just like, it paints Marchand in such a great spot. It's like Howard Stern and 91 or something. It's like, listen, man, he's in his own stratosphere and he's untethered, but he's also magnetic. And that, I just want to say, that's a good sign for you and the whole team.
Thank you. That's very nice. That's very nice of you. When we started the podcast, we kind of knew I was going to get myself in trouble, which I don't mind because I only say things that I know to be true and try to be fair. So, But yeah, it feels like it's getting weekly that we have a little issue of some sort, but it's fine.
Boy of NFL media, I can say it's a lot of responsibility to put on your shoulder, but I'm not trying to be fair all the time and not even accurate all the time. So you're on a different
that makes it easier.
That's self-proclaimed by Greg, by the way. That's not a unanimous decision that he owns that title.
Although you probably could have guessed. Let's start here because we have a few things. We ran into you at Radio Row there minutes before you did your sit down with Brian Rolapp, a big deal dude with our company. And we said we wanted to have you on again to talk about a few things. And you, one thing that you reported recently that we found interesting was the Troy Aikman Monday Night Football situation, if you will. They just finished their first year. Aikman and Buck in the booth, obviously, after years of tinkering, trying to find something that worked. There was a boogermobile involved at one point. And obviously, there were big gains having two of the best in the business in the booth. And yet, Andrew, in your reporting, you point out that it wasn't quite a smooth ride behind the scenes. And those some changes are coming ahead of year two of Aikman and Buck on ESPN.
Yeah, number one, I think it's you know, fair and the right thing to do to point out the broadcast was good last year. I mean, I think everyone agreed. I don't really think I read anybody, you know, you can have opinions on if you like Aikman or Chris Collinsworth or whomever, but I don't think I really heard anybody say, you know, Monday Night Football wasn't really improved and it felt bigger with Buck and Aikman. Behind the scenes, listen, Troy can be tough. We remember him as a Cowboy yelling at his offensive lineman. His last, you know, years at Fox, there are some issues behind the scenes. He's been very public going after Fox's CEO, Eric Shanks, after he left, even though, you know, he got a $18 million a year contract from ESPN. And, you know, they were paying him $13 million. So Troy can be difficult. You know, the way they do the games is different. They've been doing it together for two decades. And, you know, they come in on the private jet, which is what all the basically the number one teams do for the most part. Burkhardt and Olsen, maybe not, but the others who have been doing it for a long time do. And so sometimes they come in day of game. So that creates a dynamic of these are the stars and the production people are the help. And so, again, I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing, but when there's a change, there's going to be blame because what happens now, they've made the move with Phil Dean and Jimmy Platt. Phil Dean was the producer, and that's where longtime producer, three decades, been at the Monday Night Football, three decades, I should say, at ESPN, well-respected, been the number one producer for college football and then moved over to Monday Night Football for the last 4 years. And so you come in, the dynamic is those two are making $33 million, Buck and Aikman. And they're flying in. And so that creates a problem. So then they make the, so they knew Aikman didn't like, Dean's a little laid back, which you would think he would like, but he's a little laid back. Him and Aikman didn't think that was great. ESPN makes the move. And the impact it has, it affects everyone down the crew because now Steve Ackles, Derek Mobley, who's going to be the new director, Ackles, the new producer, they're going to bring in their own people.
I mean, when you mentioned that Aikman is difficult, and I get that, you know, probably from the age of 15 on, he's been told you're the center of our town, you're the center of UCLA, you're the center of X, Y, and Z. Do you think that there's, you know, is there self-awareness? Because you pointed out a great example that in week one in that Broncos-Seahawks game that he publicly lashed the telestrator operator for a mistake. And it's like, that's not what we're used to back in the day in Fox. And like, so that kind of stuff obviously runs entire crews the wrong way. Is Aikman self-aware at this point after a report like this comes out and these changes? Like, does he change his MO or does Aikman just stay Aikman no matter what and continue to be, in your words,
difficult?
I think when
these things become public, there's a chance for someone to change a little bit and kind of understand that, you know, and there's a chance for you to change. Now, like, do I know if Troy Aikman's going to change? I don't know. I don't know if he knows he's going to change for certain. But look, this is what you get into. Like, you guys are big stars. You know, I've talked to David Singer. I know you treat, you know, he's your producer. You don't treat him well. You know, you guys are, we're the stars and Singer, you know, just you do the legwork. We're going to take all the money and credit and you do all the hard work.
We'll know we're big stars when Marshawn starts, you know, covering our next contract negotiation.
And just for the record, we treat Singer well. It's Justin, our audio producer, we treat poorly. Just, I don't make that on record. Yeah.
But honestly, in all seriousness, when you look at Monday Night Football, yes, on a personal level, does it matter how you treat people? Of course. But you go to the top of what we said, the broadcast was better. So if they're showing up for some games, day of game, and it still sounds good, still looks good, is there an issue? I don't know. I mean, so does Troy change? I tend to doubt he will. I mean, it's worked out pretty well for him. Three-time Super Bowl champion, Hall of Famer, $18 million a year contract as an analyst. So In terms of those things, objective facts, he's doing pretty well. So I say probably to answer your question, I don't know what he'll do, but I doubt he'll change that much.
Yeah, it's like a classic TV, not debate, but just question. Like, who's the boss here? Is it the producer? Is it the executive producer? Is it the talent? When the talent's making $18 million a year and flying on a private jet, it's like no longer a question.
100%. Doesn't matter what the contract says. Those guys are the stars, and they're going to do it the way they want to do it. And
it's like the NBA. It's like, who's the boss, LeBron or LeBron's coach? Like, you just look at the salaries.
Well, I always say this too, like, for bosses I've had, you know, people always want someone like their lockstep with their bosses. And if you remember Casey Jones, the old Celtic coach, was kind of known for just throwing the ball out into the court and letting Larry Bird and Robert Parrish and Kevin McHale and Dennis Johnson do their thing. I think most people, you actually prefer that. Like, you want, if you're lockstep with every little thing, but you don't really want someone micromanaging. You want them to, if you're going to work hard and do your job, you want them to just kind of let you do it.
From your lips to God's ears, my friend. You know, I found one other thing about the Monday Night Football telecast, which I agree. I think everyone agrees. It was a step up as a football fan, because I really did enjoy the Manning cast. And for me, it was a strange year because I previously, when the main booth wasn't really my cup of tea, it was like, oh, it's great to have the Manning cast. With Aikman and Buck, I think, and this is maybe gets to a greater point when people talk about, should there be this much money invested in these booths when the game is really the main attraction and that will decide how many people tune in. Well, I didn't really watch the Manicast this year because I enjoyed Buck and Aikman, and it felt, when you're listening to them and watching a game that they're covering, that it's a real deal. So it was a bit of a strange thing because I missed most of the Manicast because I was into the Aikman and Buck for real.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have two TVs in the office, so I can watch both at the same time. But, like, you can go back and forth, which one you have the sound on. But, yeah, I mean, I think there is something to that. I think where, you know, the Manningcast really helps is on the games that aren't as good, right? Or if there's a blowout.
And they had a lot of them. I want
to hear what Payton, I have to say.
They had a lot of bad games. You could kind of hear Buck and Aikman grumble about it a little bit. Like, they were maybe missing those great Sunday afternoon games.
Yeah, they weren't Al talking about selling 20-year-old Mazdas, but they were.
How about your conversation with Al, Andrew, after the wild card game where he took some fire on this show as well, just for low energy? I think we talked about how it just felt like he was put in a tough situation energy-wise. With what was it, Dungy, I believe,
in
the booth with him. We've talked about, like, where does Al stand now as he's entering the twilight of his career. I think he's kind of in a Jimmy Key 95, 94, where he's throwing an 88, that fastball now, but he can still hit the corners. Like, where did you get, where did you come down on Michaels in year 7,000 of an amazing career?
Yeah, like, he's a legend. He might be the best, play-by-play TV NFL guy ever, probably is. If I'm Amazon, I'm paying the guy close to $1 million a game. I don't want him to crap on the level, right? Because it did become a thing that Amazon's games stink and they're the offense, you know, there's no offense. And that's kind of tough when, again, you're the lead voice. Now, his thing would be like, I'm not going to lie to the fans. Yeah, and he'll say he didn't do it that much. But your job's not to critique the game. It's the call of the game. And to me, you can be honest with the audience. I'm not saying to be dishonest with the audience, but a couple of times, I don't know, it's a little much, like, to me, because I think the audience that's watching, we're choosing to watch, we want to watch. And so, yeah, sometimes there's bad games and you can kind of point that out, but I thought it was a little bit too much, in my opinion.
I want to spring off that because I wonder in reverse, because when Al Michaels had that performance, and, you know, the four of us have watched Al Michaels for a really long time, but if you're 25 years old or 22, you're getting the later end of Al Michaels' career. You're getting the later end, the latter stages of Bob Costas. You're getting the very latter stages of Greg Gumbel. And these guys don't seem at times like completely in tune. And I think the second layer to this that is different than when you and I went to Ithaca back in the mid-90s is that, because it's like that. Well, we went to broadcasting school because what we were watching was so different than today. And there were so many limited channels to get on the air in any way. And these guys were icons. But now on Twitter, if you're Al Michaels or you're the producers or the production company, that the corporation behind this, and people are getting filleted on Twitter by actual other analysts and fans in general, and it becomes this grounds from where suddenly Tony Romo's no longer competent in what he's doing, he's not special, like, how annoying is this to everyone else that 20 years ago didn't have to deal with this layer of critique? You got guys killing people for Al Michaels not knowing clock management in the final. It's just like, it's so micro, and like the guy can't get out of a broadcast without getting slandered left and
right.
That's
Greg that's killing Al Michaels, by the way.
Yes, it is. Management.
Well, it's different. I always say, if Vin Scully was broadcasting baseball today, Twitter would, there'd be people crushing Vin Scully. Goes too long. These stories are too much. He has to work alone, which, you know, Vin Scully did for a large part of his career. And so I think when you, so everyone's going to get it. And I think, you know, like when you get to Nance and Romo, like CBS has an issue. Like, that's a problem. That booth is not that good right now. And they have a Super Bowl coming up this year. I mean, they got to find a way to improve that. But you know, you can't just go by social media. You can't make decisions based on social media. And you're right, though. I think it's a very good point you make about these guys at the latter end of their career. I think they should go as long as they want. Like, I don't think it's anybody's their legacy. Like, you know, Willie Mays as a Met. Nobody thinks of Willie Mays as a Met, right? If I said Willie Mays, that's, you don't think, oh, he fell in the outfield as a Met. You know, we're all too young to remember actually seeing that. But, like, that's, like, the kind of one of the, you know, Namath as a Ram. Like, those things, I don't think those matter. But I will say, with a younger, you're saying, like, the people who don't have that history as much with these legendary announcers, when they're not as enthusiastic, and I think that was the big thing. That was an incredible comeback. And Al and Tony were doing the game as if it was like a, you know, Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock, and just like, eh, whatever. And you could feel it. Like, you could feel the comeback, I think, as a fan. Like, you didn't know they were going to do it, but you could feel it happening. And they were just late to it. You know, Dungy's low energy. And Al's also, you know, he's not high energy. He needs the, you need that yin and yang with Al at this point. And he's never been a huge high energy guy. But, and he's, you know, economy of words as well, which is great in large degree. But on that game, yeah, that wasn't good.
But it's not great when Tony Dungy's your partner, or Kirk Herbstreit for that matter, who's like fine, but I don't know if he's picking up Al because the NFL is not his number one sport. And I think that comes across a little bit too. So it's putting him in a tough spot. I tend to think, look, I think people would love Vin Scully because Vin Scully's great. And I think people loved Al Michaels until recently. And it's just because he's not as good anymore. And so it feels fair to me.
But to Mark's point, like, there's like a level of scrutiny that exists now. And yes, especially at these primetime games, it's, and the advent of Twitter and social media, it's like people have to have takes. And it's a part of, like, I call them the booth wars, right, Andrew? So it's like, what has happened in the last few years with all this money, it's put such a spotlight on these booths in the way that it's never been on before, that now it feels like it's open season for everything these guys say. It's got to be pretty difficult. Do you think this is kind of a, we'll remember, like, this is a pretty good idea. Andrew writes a book down the line called Booth Wars. I get a 7% cut of it.
7%, all right.
And it tells like a crazy story about, here is the story of when, and the media world, when booths turned into the most valuable entity and blah, blah, blah. Bestseller.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Is this going to continue in perpetuity, or do you think we'll remember this as like eventually the networks are going to kind of pull the reins back on this, and or do you think guys are just going to keep on getting paid like superstar quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think the NFL is different, right? Because you got Tom Brady in theory coming into the booth not next year but the year after at $37.5 million, which I reported per year. So if you think about it, if Patrick Mahomes 15 years from now, you know, or Joe Burrow, you know, goes into a booth, like, what are they going to, they're going to need to make a lot of money. So I don't think that's changing to get these ex players. And I think that, you know, Joe Buck is a young guy. I mean, he's in his 50s, so he could do it for another, you know, 15, 20 years. Or you look at like Al, you know, they could go, who knows how long he could go. So I don't think he's getting many pay cuts, if any. I think the money is going to be there. You know, cry me a river for these guys. You know, yes, they have the scrutiny, but you get that direct deposit every week. It's not bad. And it's a weird job because you know, this all happened basically because ESPN was incompetent in trying to put together a booth. You know, they lost Tirico to NBC. That kind of started everything because Tirico's a good play-by-player. Mm. Who's the most important person in that, in any of these booths, to make the analysts better? I mean, that's the most important person. And so they lost Tirico. And then they had trouble with McDonough, and Gruden didn't work out fully. And so, and then they spiraled into ridiculousness and like really some of the worst decisions in TV history with Tessitore, Booger, and Witten. I mean, that just like was hard to believe when it happened. And then like, you know, okay, let's give it a chance. And it was like, oh, this isn't good. And so you look at it. So then eventually it gets to the point where Romo's a free agent. He's the hottest thing 3 years out. And he goes from 3 to 4 million to 18 million a year because ESPN is breathing down CBS's throat. And there's NFL deals on the horizon, which is the most important thing to these companies sports-wise and maybe even overall. So CBS wants to keep Romo, so they go into negotiations with the top guy at that point. ESPN wanted to steal him. And this is another little point, and I could go on and on about this, but before the pandemic, there was a feeling, I wrote something about this, that ESPN and ABC and Disney were gonna go after CBS's Sunday package. And so the deal Romo had, he has the best luck effort, was right before the pandemic hit. Really, you know, was like known. And so he got in there right before. And then you go forward, ESPN in their negotiations with the NFL, we want a couple Super Bowls. They get a couple Super Bowls. They tell the NFL, we're going to improve the booth. So they're Super Bowl worthy. And, you know, last year we had just total tremendous mayhem.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, you're a media insider, of course. You're one of the top ones. Dan, for a long time, you know, considered himself a self-styled media insider.
Why are you putting it in the past tense?
Okay. Okay. But he sometimes faces some competition in-house. You know, I try to do some work myself. He doesn't like it. I ask around. And the biggest issue.
We've just subjected Andrew to that, by the way. He's a professional.
I was so looking forward to that.
I liked it. I thought it was good. I'm ready for like the morning zoo.
Well, there's a dolphin in there at some point, just to let you know.
Yeah. And Greg, from the Zeuser in the morning, just sometimes if you have to go into underground garages in a trench coat and a cigarette to ask the questions, you just might have to change your path. And it's not just text messaging. It's getting you're rolling up the sleeves and getting your fingernails dirty. That's going to get you the answers you're looking for.
Andrew, do you see what I'm dealing with show to show on this vehicle that we operate here?
Yeah, look, I mean, we could talk offline, but I think like Zeus in the morning, your own thing, you might want to just take off. And if you do, you know, let me know and we'll get a big story out there. A little breakup, you know.
Let me hit you up after the show. Andrew, incredible as always. And yes, like I said, it's a really good podcast. If this stuff is as interesting to you as it is to us, Marchand and Orand, sports media podcast, get that wherever you get your podcast. And of course, New York Post for all the latest scoopage on the game. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
All right, there he goes. Andrew Marchand. And how about this? Like, get Burkhart and Olsen on a damn private jet. I mean, that's where they draw the line on their carbon footprint. Fox, like, if all these other dudes are flying in style, you got to have your number one team. However short that stay may be before Brady decides to get involved, put him on a jet. Or don't. Or put no one on a jet. How about this?
Yeah.
Either put nobody on a jet.
I mean,
and you don't have to put everybody on a jet.
Right. The greatest story of all was John Madden traversing the country to and fro in a bus. And now,
on a bus.
You know,
the greatest
that
who ever
seemed
did
to work for him.
On a damn bus. And nobody was better.
I mean, it was a luxury bus. There was a lot going on in there. There was a lot of fun to be had. No, there's no.
It was
a
broken
that.
Down Greyhound that he found at a chop shop that he did just enough to get it rolling. And he crisscrossed that country for 30 years.
A real man.
All right. This is what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. We're going to hit the mailbag, and then we're going to say goodbye.
It's backyard barbecue season, so light up the charcoal or fire up the propane and throw some burgers on the grill. Some people like cheeseburgers, others like hamburgers, and people will argue about pickles until the cows come home. But there's one thing that needs no debate: Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. It's so rich and creamy that it instantly makes any burger irresistible. You add Hellman's and boom, next level burgers. It's that easy. And then there's the side that every backyard burger cries out for, potato salad. Do you want to know the best secret ingredient? You've probably already guessed it. Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. There are two kinds of potato salad. Deliciously irresistible, rich and creamy potato salad and potato salad made without Hellman's. It's up to you what you want to serve. For great recipe ideas, visit Hellman's.com.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
All right, welcome back. Good show so far. We got some news in, got some media talk in. You know, one more thing about Romo. You know, he is getting paid gobs of money to do this. The criticism is mounting. He's been under the microscope for the last 25 years of his life, right? 20 years of his life, whatever. Dating back to his, you know, college days or even high school, whatever. And now he's a very rich man. And it's a guaranteed contract, more or less, I'm assuming. I wonder, like, we talk about, oh, there was this coming to Jesus meeting. And, you know, he's being asked to step it up. Like, there's no guarantee Romo is taking anything out of that. So the idea that Romo comes back and is different, that could happen. But there's also a chance it's just like he's like, whatever. And he's like, I don't even agree with what you're saying. I think it's just interesting, like, the level of give a fuck Tony Romo might have to any criticism, either outside or inside his own, you know, employer.
It is funny to kind of think about that compared to, like, being an NFL player. Like, God forbid you guarantee an NFL player's contract, but you got to get that private jet for Tony Romo to show up day of, like, and not have done any homework and make more than, you know, about 96% of the NFL.
I mean, I also, like, I had assumed, number one, that he is working hard and not just totally mailing it in. That's a massive assumption. But, like, if someone's, well, I don't know, someone says go get three times better at calling a football game, like, what's the roadmap for that? I mean, you were lauded as the greatest thing that's ever happened. And now suddenly, I just think it's a lot of it has to do with just public perception. And, like, he's the next guy we gang up on. I've been hard on him in the past, but I never liked him as much as you guys did, I think, out of the gate. But the idea that he suddenly became a disaster, I don't find that to be entirely valid,
I think,
either.
When Nance and Romo reunite, whenever that is later this year, I think the first thing Nat should say is, like, usually it's kind of like a trite conversation filler, but I think he should say it in a pointed way. Hey, Tony, working hard or hardly working?
Stupid.
I like that Nance is taking some heat in all this too, from our buddy Marchand. I think there's something to that.
Yeah, he does. He catches strays from certain figures, including Marchand. All right, let's get to the mailbag. We put out a prompt, and I want to say, I've always been very upfront about this with this show. We ask the listeners to get involved and tee us up, and then we have conversations. And sometimes it's not so hot. Sometimes I feel like I'm really digging through and struggling. But this is not one of those times. I think the listeners really nailed it this time. We have a nice
a nice collection of questions. So let's dig in. The Gravedigger, our producer, is going to tee us up. Go ahead, bud.
All righty. First question comes from Ross Johnson Comedy. Does Baker
tell me
have
more
what it
about
ta-
your comedy, Ross? No, okay, go ahead.
Does Baker have what it takes to take Tampa to playoffs? I personally haven't seen loads of him, having only followed from 2019, but I think he could truly surprise a few.
I guess that's the joke time. Right there. But,
yeah. Go ahead, Mark.
I don't think that Baker Mayfield is someone you could project as taking anyone anywhere right now. I mean, I think he's probably adequate with a lot of issues that we've seen as a quarterback that date back years outside of a couple really hot streaks. And I don't know if Tampa's set up to be the fertile ground. And like, to me, it's like you're following Tom Brady's footsteps. This feels like a couple years of let's kind of find our quarterback who's not named Baker Mayfield down the road.
I'm not even entirely convinced he is going to be the quarterback. He got basically Drew Locke's contract. I understand there's kind of no one else there, but the money is usually instructive. He does have Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Justin Gage. Like at first, when you had them, maybe fifth to last in the power rankings. Russell Gage. I always say Justin Gage. It's just never going to change. Former Titans, great. I was like, is that too high for the Bucks? But then I realized, no, they still have some like legitimate NFL players.
My two thoughts on this are, I think this is a good year to follow Tom Brady. This is the first time it's okay to follow Tom Brady because Tom Brady wasn't very good last year. And I think everybody was kind of ready to turn the page. And I also think Baker is one of the big winners of the offseason. Like, I've never been a big fan of him as a player. And I don't think, other than a couple, flashes last year, really one quarter of a primetime game and then one blowout of a hideous Denver team. I didn't think he showed that much even with Los Angeles. And yet I think he is going to be a starting quarterback come September in week one. And that is pretty big victory for a guy that an otherwise a market with guys of his production level settling for backup jobs. I think he has a real chance to be a starter in week one, which I think some of that we talk about in some of the Baker juice, and Odell has the same thing going on. It just elevates him, I think, even within the Cognoscenti internally. I think it gives him a little leg up on other guys, even if maybe the production isn't there.
I think you're right. I'd say, Bruce Arians was very high on Baker Mayfield and probably thinks, I can do what another team didn't. And whenever you're drafted in the top, we see it with Sam Darnold too, top one, two, three, there's always going to be a team until you truly fail that's going to think, we can make this work.
But Baker especially, because he's had very high profile moments, yeah, including that playoff win over Pittsburgh that stick with people's psyches, I guess.
I mean, starting week one's great, but you can still turn into Sam Darnold in Carolina or Mitchell Trubisky in Pittsburgh if you're not in a position to play well.
Right. But just the opportunity could be there as a week one starter. That's pretty good. All right. Let's move on.
From JRK Ray. The NFL as a whole feels more and more like it's adopted the attitude that if you don't win a Super Bowl, your season was a failure. Where does the line begin where it's okay to have consistent success, like the Steelers or Ravens, without frequent Super Bowl wins? What's better as a fan?
I want to push back just a little bit on that because I don't know if I see I know the parity makes it feel like more teams have a chance to win the Super Bowl every year, which is the goal of the whole parody idea. But I was going to, what I took out of this question, guys, was like, what are the teams that you do feel heading into 23 are in Super Bowl or bust mode? I would just look at the top of my power rankings: Chiefs, Eagles, Bengals, Bills, Niners. I kind of stop it at that. Those five teams, like anything less than a championship would be considered failure. Do you guys agree with that? Do you think there's other teams that are kind of in that boat?
I would agree with that, because when we did the power rankings exercise yesterday, I think it really falls off a cliff into a middle world after that. Where I think, to answer the other part of his question, like look at the Seahawks or Jaguars from a year ago. I mean, I think if there's progress and you see as a fan, like, wait a minute, these guys have a plan, there's a vision, and you have a quarterback, like whether it's Geno Smith, who becomes a big story, or Trevor Lawrence, who takes a leap, then it's like, let's hang on for the next. We want this to be a next 4 or 5 or 6 year window where we could make the Super Bowl, where if you're the Bills, it's just bitter disappointment if you didn't get there.
Yeah, I want to think that the journey is the exciting part as a fan, because if it's title or bust, and there is a bit more of that, I think, in today's sports, just media talk, that like everything but a title is a disappointment. That's a silly way to be a fan, because you're just going to be disappointed 31 out of 32 years if you're like an average year. And like, I think about, I'm a fan of the Celtics. I'm enjoying the journey of the regular season, the ups and the downs. Like that, like if they don't get there in the end, it's going to hurt a lot for sure. But if you're not going to have fun along the way, you just want your team to have a little fun along the way, or else what are we really doing here as sports fans?
But
like,
you
got to like it.
Using the Celtics as an example, you know, they've won one title in, you know, 30 years or whatever. But if you were asking, if Greg Rosenthal was a 43-year-old man in 1988, and they had won all those titles, that's absolutely how you would view the prism of their season, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. I just mean, like, you need to find more out of being a sports fan than just like wanting the title. Like, that's gonna like change everything that you've ever known of being a sports fan, because it won't. Like, you'll still just be a sports fan after it. Like, you gotta like the process. You gotta, I think as a fan, I want that consistent success. I like the Ravens are a good example. Like, yes, it's been frustrating how these seasons have ended, but I would much prefer a team that is consistently good than one that just pops up for one title and then goes dark like the Bucks for 20 years.
I think also with, and this isn't a shot, Greg, but as a Patriots fan, it puts you in a different mindset with that. And I think with the, in some way, because you got to experience the Super Bowls and know what it felt like after the fact. I think the Eagles are a good example of that in their fan base, getting close to the mountaintop, waiting 50 years, winning that title. I think being a fan, and it colors my fandom as well. Like, I feel like fans deserve and kind of need catharsis at some point. They need like that true moment of true celebration to get to the mountaintop, and then you could really properly contextualize what it means to be a fan. When you're just waiting and waiting and waiting forever, like literally your whole life, it does kind of put you in a different, you know, mind space.
I guess I'm saying, though, like, you're looking for Rodgers to give you some enjoyment over the next few years as a Jets fan, or at least just give you something. Like, that's what, you know, give you something.
I totally disagree with that, though, because in that specific case, not to go down this wormhole again, if they go 9-8 next year with Rodgers, that is a vast disappointment compared to what it's all being
games.
Done.
Have some moments for sure.
I wonder if they could
win 9 games. I'm sorry, everybody.
I'd love to see like a human study on what percentage of human fans never experience a championship across all sports. Because if you think about it, there's a lot of crappy teams that never win a championship. It's got to be like 70-something%. If not more, never have that mountaintop moment. So when you've had it, it's a lot easier. And Greg, I'm not pointing just at you, but it's a lot easier to be philosophical about the journey and have a nice time when you've had that moment. If you haven't, and you start to get into your 40s and 50s and 60s, it becomes a desperate chase that you have no control over.
Mets, Jets, Knicks fans born after 1973, raise your hand. All right, what else?
It also depends on how many sports you root for. You know, the more sports, more chances of your team of winning.
Most people get something if they root for 3 or 4.
All right. Ben Lynn wants to know, if Desmond Ridder isn't the answer for the Falcons, has Art Smith made it inevitable he will be fired by the end of the year?
This kind of gets to my point about what are the Falcons trying to do right now. And if Ridder isn't the guy, I just feel for Arthur Smith, because I will feel like he never got a chance. He went from Matt Ryan over the hill to rightly getting rid of Matt Ryan and trying to figure out a transition year with Mariota to taking a risk on a third round pick with Heinicke as the backup. If he ends up getting canned because they don't go to the playoffs in their first 3 years under this leadership, which happens all the time in the NFL, I'll feel like if I'm Arthur Smith, I got cheated.
I agree with that. I think he could be the rare guy that would have a chance to keep his job after missing the playoffs 3 straight years. Because I think they really took a long-term view when Terry Fontenot and Arthur Smith took over. Last year was the ultimate, like, we're just going to take it on the chin dead cap year. Like, they had the most dead cap in the league, and maybe it was the most in NFL history. I think if they had like a promising season this season in any way, that they would give him another chance. But Ridder is the key, and yet I still am not totally convinced he's going to be the guy. I don't know why.
Well, we don't have enough evidence, but it was a month ago at Super Bowl week that Arthur Blank was spinning sea poems about Desmond Ridder. So I think from the owner on down, there seems to be some buy-in. So if you're Arthur Smith and you get fired and they show progress, totally unfair. I mean, he's not making this decision unilaterally.
What else?
All right. I think this
good
one
question
is
so far, right? They're doing well.
Like him.
This one's for Greg from After. Your daughter comes to you and says that she has started dating an NFL coach, not necessarily
she's
a head
11.
Coach.
She's 11. Which I'm reporting coach? Them to the authorities and ending it there.
Okay,
imagine this is 10 years in the future, Greg.
She's 21. Coach? She's 21 and dating an NFL head coach. I'm
this
going
is
to
20
the authorities.
Years. This is 20 years in the future.
Have they aged? She's still too young.
No, in this scenario... your daughter's in her early 30s and the coaches are exactly as they are now. And go.
Which coach are you hoping she isn't dating?
All
or
of
is.
Them.
Is or isn't.
Or terrible. Is. All of them. They'd be bad husbands. I mean, I'm not saying like they're bad husbands in the context of like whether they're good parents or what they do. But ultimately, I'm hoping for my daughter, someone that can be there more often than an NFL head coach is there.
That's a great answer from Greg and a man that loves his family. I love it. Yeah, let's just clean up. They're not bad husbands. They are workflow scenarios. And I remember a few years back, there was an excellent NFL Films documentary that kind of told the life of scouts, not even guys that not necessarily the bottom of the ladder, guys that were just ingrained in organizations, and you got to look at what their schedule is and how rarely they saw their families. And like the workflow doesn't get lesser the higher you move up the chain. It's a very difficult gig, and shout out really to the wives and the families that are able to make it work.
I'll never forget, I think I've told this once before years ago, but at a Super Bowl where Dan and I were tasked with writing, I'm not kidding, about 24 blogs a day, 7 days in a row, I tracked down the wife of Marv Levy, and Marv Levy was with her, and like he was unavailable, but she was. And so I decided I'm just going to ask her what it's been like to be married to an NFL coach. And I thought I'd get a lot of, you know, it's been a successful run, they go to all these Super Bowls, like he's the toast of the town. It was the opposite, to Greg's point. And it was, this is someone that was not available for 3 or 4 decades in a row. And then suddenly he was. It threw our entire household out of order, because suddenly he's hanging around all the time. And the report was negative enough where it did not make NFL.com.
I remember you telling me about that. I might have even seen the raw copy of the article that never saw the light of day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Marv Levy buried in a big spot.
Yeah, that was like the story of the Michael Bennett story after the Malcolm Butler game, where I asked him about what happened on the sideline after the Wilson pick, and he made a derogatory comment about my manhood and like mentioned my wife, and it was just like, what is going on? So it was like, you know, it was crazy. Wes used to love this story. It was crazy. Like it was, I remember being like stunned when it happened. Like he was being a jerk. Like, but I understood in the moment he was
a next level
out.
Jerk. I mean, yeah. That's next right. level jerk.
He so I went back to the press box, and I was blogging, like live blogging or whatever, all week. And I wrote a blog post about it, and you know, I maybe there was some return fire in it, and then that was very quickly stricken from the record as well and eliminated from the website. I don't know if it ever made it up. It might have been up for a little bit, but that was a memory.
The Wild West of NFL.com.
What else we got?
The best part of the mailbag is when you guys get into these stories about your lives. It's great. Okay, next question. From Iwin Thomas. Is it possible to have the same team of ATN in consecutive seasons? I can't see any other team to be more deserving to be it again than the Lions.
I'm in. I want it to happen. I think they've broken the boundaries of what it means to be the team of ATN. I want to stay on this ride.
They lost me a little bit with the Jamal Williams non-bring-back scenario.
It's one guy.
I know, but like, no, I we make
it's
our
an
own
important
rules.
Guy, though. It's important
we also
guy.
Don't do it for years in a row. So I mean, there's clearly
right.
no.
It's a feel
no
thing.
System.
It's a feel thing. I'll just say, like, you know, in the interest of trying to keep things fresh as we enter our second decade of this show, running back the team of ATN as the Lions. I don't know, man. I see where you're coming from, Greggy.
But that is what would be keeping it fresh, doing something we've never
it's
done.
One way to look
unprecedented.
At it.
That's how I'm
you sound like
at
you
it.
Sound like a movie producer that's being criticized for there are too many sequels. Why do you keep on doing superhero sequels? Like, no, the plot's different in this one.
I just all mean right. it's like making more of a commitment than we ever have before. I mean, I'm gonna be rooting for him. Regardless.
Think about week. Think
you
about
can't
week.
Control me.
We think about late December, Greggy. Of a Lions, like, you know, 28-24 win that keeps them in the playoff picture, and we're singing that song on a Sunday night again for like the third month in a row after
well,
doing
just,
it for four months the previous year.
Imagining Mark's annoyance to it, which I can see in his face right now.
No, I
me
mean,
want to do it even more.
Now
I think
you know your way
to,
into my heart, Greg. Now it's getting a little more interesting.
We have to agree that with every team of ATL, it used to just be Wes's team, and it was his way or the highway, but. There are varying levels of buy-in, and I attempted to be, you know, cooperative, and then they kind of did win me over.
Well, that's part of the reason I like the Lions.
I'm annoyed now.
Is that I felt like they were a team we could all truly get behind. Maybe not Mark quite as much, but you know, they were agreed upon quite easily.
Also, the stars aligned with that team on the rise, and Campbell, and they were on Hard Knocks. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Hey, listen,
we'll
the future
That's
is a
fair.
Mystery.
That's fair. We got to wait. We got to wait till the training camp, how we feel.
All right. What else? A couple more.
All right. From TK. How much does the Giants being relevant again hurt Greg Rosenthal?
You know, Greg, I want to tee you up on this one. I want you to be honest, okay? Because a couple shows ago, and I took no umbrage with it. Like you pointed out when I took some shots at Jalen Ramsey, you're like, oh, you know how Dan is. You know, he has certain teams he hates, and he's just going to do that. And it's like, you know what? Yeah, I don't like the Dolphins. Don't like the Patriots. I also try to look at both sides, but I will admit it that I do not like those teams because of my fan leaning. Maybe this is an opportunity for you finally, and 42 and 46 obviously is the driving reason behind it all. Just admit it. Don't hide behind, oh, I'm a media guy. Like, you don't like the Giants, and you didn't like that they had a bounce back season in 22.
That's not true. I didn't like the Eli Manning era. I didn't.
Oh,
like
I wouldn't
was,
either if I was a Patriots
he
fan.
He was puffed up, and they were sort of like this weird team that, you know, was probably like the 12th best team of that decade, just like in aggregate, and yet they snuck away two Super Bowls. Didn't feel right. But once that was all gone and flushed away, I'm fine with the
Giants. I'm loyal to football.
I do not believe anything you just said, by the way. I just want to be honest with you.
It's like, true. The only teams that I like, it depends on the year and who's the coach and who's the vibe and what's going on, whether I kind of like a team or not. The Commanders under this ownership has been the consistent team I am open that I root against.
Yeah, but that's easy.
Yeah,
that's easy,
but it's guy. True.
But what
it's
I'm looking true. For is the real stuff, like the reason why you're even sitting where you are right now. Because you love football, you were a fan, you grew up, and you did suffer those Super Bowl losses, and it is New York, and there's a Boston-New York rivalry, you know, that all factors in. Just acknowledge it. Nobody's going to think any less of you. That's all I'm saying.
The Peyton Manning Colts and Broncos were, like, so much more hateable. Like, the Giants were just these teams that popped up, and the Patriots blew it. By then, they had banked some Super Bowls, though, that. I'm not admitting it.
All right. That was great. What else? One more.
All
Jeff
right.
Drake.
From Jeff Drake. Why do you act as Odell Beckham's publicists?
Wait a minute. First of
can
all,
you, can
I
you
don't...
bring that up again? I just want to see the spelling of Odell Beckham here. It's O apostrophe capital D E L L. Okay.
Took the time to apostrophe that, but didn't apostrophe Beckham's plural S at the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, we usually don't. Yeah, grammar shame around here, but that one was pretty special.
I think he's referring to an Irish Odell Beckham that we don't even know about potentially. But like,
hi,
I think it's
Odell
it's,
Beckham.
Right. It's so absurd to suggest that we're his publicists. I think if anything, we've been like, if I were to tilt us in one direction, it would be almost like overly critical, like not even willing to see the player sometimes. And like, look at the Odell Beckham experience through a negative lens. I certainly did as a Browns fan, I think that he annoyed Dan, both of us, during parts of his Giants run. I mean, we can see his talent.
I've been critical of Odell Beckham on this podcast for 8 years, basically.
Now, and but apostrophe Dell Beckham.
Yeah, maybe it's a different
maybe
guy.
We have been too charitable to him. I don't know.
Yeah, you and Wes would war on Odell a little bit because, you know, Chris would say how, look, I've never seen a receiver come into the league this good. I think that's the answer. Maybe I'm the publicist because I ranked him so high in my top 101 and he's still sitting out there. Maybe I'm rating him a little too highly in terms of what he can offer now. But the reason is because the first 3 years in the league were as impressive, over 1,300 yards a season, a total sensation, literally led the league in yards per game as a rookie, as any receiver we've seen come into the league in a long, long time. And that just like put him on a place where his influence, his attention is outsized. And by the way, it's worth pointing out, literally the last time we saw him on the field, he was sort of the difference in a team winning the Super Bowl. And that's part of it.
You're right.
Go ahead, Mark.
Well, no, I would say if we are doing a Odell Beckham to the Jets emergency show 5 hours from now, let's see how charitable I am on that front.
Yeah, I this is the Jeff Darlington. He was on one of the ESPN shows this morning. This was Get up. That's edgy. We should very much consider Odell Beckham Jr. still on the table as an option for the New York Jets. In fact, we can go even further to say that both sides would still like to see this done. That sounds pretty strong. That's pretty strong reporting from Darlington. And if Odell Beckham does end up on the Jets, all I could say is what a wonderful player. I mean, but let's save that for the emergency podcast. I mean, he is a great player. It would be a sexy wide receiver room if he ended up in there. But yes, the idea of pairing those two guys, Rodgers and Beckham, it would be rather annoying. Potentially.
Well, I would. This will never happen, but I think it's been, you know, fairly thought up by some that what if they get Odell Beckham, they've shipped Elijah Moore out the door, but then Odell Beckham is your star here along with Garrett, and like suddenly there's no Rodgers retires in the 11th hour, and you've got Zach Wilson and Odell Beckham. I am signing up to watch that unfold on public television.
Wait, what was this? What did you just lay out?
That they get Alan Lazard, they get Odell Beckham, and then Odell Beckham is like, you know, stunned to discover that Aaron Rodgers, out of his good friend apparently, out of nowhere retires, and it's Zach Wilson and dealing with Odell Beckham all next year. That would be tasty.
It's like week
sounds
six.
Like, in, it sounds like in, you have some unresolved Odell Beckham issues I yourself,
might.
Mark.
I might.
It's like
That's
week
possible.
Six, and Goody is like, no, I am insisting on the first round pick. I don't know why he's talking like that.
Because he's German. All right. Thank you to everybody that sent in questions. That's it for today's show. Good week of shows. We'll be back on Tuesday. Don't be alarmed when you don't see us on Monday, especially after the Marchand conversation. We'll be back on Tuesday with another episode. Until then, this is the old Zeuser signing off for Quiet Storm and the old boss and the Gravedigger. Greggy, I think we had made a little progress on the Giants thing today. I know you didn't say anything, but I think it's just a little bit of progress.
I don't even know what progress means in this context.
Heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you. Burgers are best fresh from the grill. Well, more specifically, burgers with Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. It's so rich and creamy that it instantly makes any burger irresistible. And what backyard barbecue is complete without some potato salad? Not just any potato salad, of course. Potato salad highlights the rich, creamy goodness of Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. So if you want to take your barbecue season to the next level, stock up on Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. For great recipe ideas, visit Hellmann's.com.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.